Giving of ourselves to others is a beautiful thing. As a former caregiver and a mom of two, and a wife, and a daughter-in-law, and a friend, and a coach, I think I have some solid experience with that. And while I wouldn't want it to be any other way, I love the nurturing side of me. I have learned a lesson or two about the cost of caring for others at the expense of myself. It's why I'm a caregiver advocate and talk nonstop about self-care. And it's why it was so important for me to share today's topic and guest with you. If you are burned out from giving to everyone but you, save this episode and put it on repeat. If you are tired of dieting but still have health goals, stay with me because there is a way to get where you want to go without sacrificing what you think you must. If you are ready to, or at least curious how to, give yourself more, then join me because hope and help are a conversation away. You're listening to the Positively Living Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Zarotny, founder of Positively Productive Systems, and a coach certified in time and stress management, helping clients make space for what matters most in their lives. Join me each episode and we'll talk about decluttering, stress management, habits, personalized productivity, gratitude, and so much more. I understand the overwhelm of life because I'm a wife, mom to kids and cats, and a former caregiver. I'm here to help you choose what's right for you so you can do less, live more, and breathe easier. Sound good? Let's get to it. Today, I welcome Georgie Fear to the Positively Living Podcast. Georgie is a registered dietitian, nutrition expert, and board-certified sports nutrition specialist. She specializes in helping people leave behind dieting, emotional eating, and unhealthy relationships with food, and has a long track record of helping clients who have tried every diet on earth finally reach their weight loss goals. Georgie's known for her friendly, gentle style of scientifically grounded nutrition counseling and has an immense love for what she does. Her works include Lean Habits for Lifelong Weight Loss, the Racing Weight Cookbook, and the Breaking Up with Binge Eating podcast. When she's not coaching her clients, you'll find her walking in the woods with her husband, cuddling her bulldog, or in the kitchen crafting new flavorful recipes. I have known Georgie since 2015 when I discovered her Lean Habits book. I was stepping away from diets and embracing intuitive eating at the time, of which I'm still a huge supporter. If you're curious about the benefits of intuitive eating, you can listen to episode 25 with Megan Hadley. Intuitive eating is healing, and it's a great point for ditching diets, but I was in search of a way to find balance. It's like that next step to bring the pendulum back toward the middle ground. I didn't want a diet, but I also didn't want to ignore my health needs either. When I found Georgie's book and it focused on habits, well, you can imagine my glee. The idea of honoring our desire and need to lose weight, but to do it through a series of steps that involve tremendous self-awareness and habit development, it was like it was made for me. And it made a difference in how I saw myself and the world around me. She and her co-author, Alicia Fetters, take this concept to the next level with their new book by offering the idea that we need to meet our wellness goals through more, not less. Their book, Give Yourself More, is all about changing the losing mindset so you can change your body and life for the positive. It asks, what if you stopped trying to subtract from your life and started adding to it? What if your priority wasn't on shrinking portions, cutting carbs, or burning calories, but giving yourself more of what you need to thrive physically, mentally, and emotionally? The answer, you would learn to live more fully, love your body, and take up the space you deserve, mentally, emotionally, and physically. You'd create healthy habits that would last a lifetime because they'd fill you up rather than drain you. And this includes losing weight. So many of the concepts Georgie and I talk about connect to the productivity and organizing topics I cover on the podcast and coach with my clients. The way she and Alicia focus on adding more is much like the technique to replace bad habits by crowding them out with the good. The reasons for and effects of binge eating relate significantly to clutter and the reasons why we overbuy. Georgie talks about working with clients and wanting to find out why they eat what they eat and details about their life before ever suggesting what to change or what to do. Does that sound familiar? Understanding values and purpose are the first steps we need to take before organizing and becoming more productive. As she and I talk, you'll see so many patterns emerging, which is exciting because as you become aware of these concepts and learn these new skills, you can apply them throughout your life. Georgie shares the 6 areas from her book where we can give ourselves more: body love, movement, emotions, fueling, pleasure, and rest. These aren't just categories for the sake of having them, they are needs that we often neglect, which can lead to unhappiness, resentment, constant stress, emotional eating, and feeling too drained to work out. Conversely, when we meet our needs in these areas, we are more resilient to life's challenges and stresses, and can more effectively achieve a healthy diet and consistent exercise habit. She offers incredible details for each, covering body positivity and esteem, and how a gratitude practice for our body can help shift our appreciation for it. She covers the dangers of emotion suppression and how to become curious, a favorite word here on the Positively Living podcast, about why we do what we do. She talks about bringing fun back into your life for movement, for pleasure, for the scientific fact that enjoyment is the best predictor of repeating an activity. The key player in all of this is love. When you love someone, you want to do what's best for them. When we give ourselves more and embrace more of who we are, that self-directed love can lead us to our goals. Welcome, Georgie Fear, to the Positively Living podcast. Georgie, I've been a fan and follower of yours since 2015, when I read your Lean Habits book and joined the Facebook group connected to it. And I don't know if you knew this, but what led me to you was the desire to find support in weight loss that made sense after my shift back to intuitive eating. I had thankfully eschewed dieting, but the non-dieters I connected with also felt determined not to discuss healthy weight balance. And in my search for a happy medium and a safe place to discuss options, I found you and your community, and I'm forever grateful.
Well, I'm so glad you did, Lisa. Yeah, I think that's one of the unique things that, you know, Nutrition Loft and the books that I write and the people I work with, one of the unique things we bring to the table is that you can engage in intuitive eating and a non-diet approach and still have a weight loss goal or a healthy weight maintenance aspect to your life. You know, obviously intuitive eating, it began as an original, you know, very specific sort of idea, but many people have taken it and adopted it in their own ways to their own benefits. And for some people, they find removing body weight from the equation completely is the way that they want to take it. But then I disagree when they use that to say other people can't seek weight loss, especially if it's something that benefits their health. You know, many medical professionals, a doctor will tell their patient losing weight would be effective in lowering your blood pressure and reducing your blood sugars and, you know, not putting you on diabetes medication. All of these things are evidence-based and substantiated. And then you'll have some intuitive eating coaches or experts online that will say, oh, that's hogwash. You should just be as heavy as you want to be. And unfortunately, I feel like that's selling people short. So it's not the message I take.
Right. And I think it all comes down to, you know, what you're describing is that personal choice that we have, that personal understanding, and the pendulum seems to swing so far. And what I really appreciated about the dialogue that you have with all of us is that it's not those extremes. I was looking, like I said, for that happy medium myself personally, and that's what I hope for others too. And it's also what I preach in terms of productivity and living well, in that we have to find what works best for us. So if you're with a doctor that you trust and you understand that modifying your weight will help you, then you don't want to be told that's not the goal either. It needs to have that balance and make sense in your life.
100%. Yeah, I agree. And it's also nice to know that, you know, we used to think that there were two options. There was a sort of dichotomous situation. You either have to go down committing your life to dieting and weighing and measuring everything you eat, Or you have to buy Moomoo's and just give up and think that you will never, ever achieve a healthy weight. And that's so, so far from the truth, because there are so many options in the middle ground where you can care about your weight and you can have goals to, you know, reshape your body. But at the same time, you don't have to take all the joy out of life, and you definitely don't have to sacrifice your mental health or your enjoyment to achieve a healthier body. So one of the kind of foundations of giving yourself more is that you don't sacrifice one thing all the time to get another, that you can have good health and a smile on your face and healthy relationships, and you can really have everything in balance.
I love that, not sacrificing one thing to get another, but having that balance. And another guest I had on talking about, you know, trying to live clutter-free. And it's so funny because I focus a lot in my work on the idea of less. And I was thinking in terms of like just the semantics of what we're talking about today and you talking about more. And I think it's so important that we think about where more and where less makes sense in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you're definitely talking in terms of saying that we've just constantly tried to bring ourselves, I think, especially as women, to less, less, less. But let's back up just a little bit. If you please share a little bit about, you know, your story in coming into this. I mean, you're a registered dietitian who speaks, at least in my estimation, so much more logically and so much more holistically than others. And I would love to know a little bit about how you came down this path to today and to your new book, Give Yourself More.
Sure. So as you said, I'm a registered dietitian, which means from a pretty young age, I knew I wanted to do nutrition. So I studied nutritional science as an undergrad and then continued with some grad school and also did a 1-year internship to, you know, stamp myself as the RD. And since 2005, I've been doing nutrition counseling with individuals. I also, you know, I do some work with groups and presentations, but the real core of my work has always been getting to know people on a one-to-one basis, learning about who they are, what they eat, and why they eat the way they do, and then looking at what we can change in that whole spectrum to move them closer to their goals. And of course, everybody has different goals. Weight loss is a wide umbrella that is common to many people. But if we break it down further, people have very, very different reasons and very different experiences that they want to have in their life that leads them to think that they want to lose weight. So sometimes it's more important for people to run a faster 5K. Other people couldn't care less about that sort of thing. And it's more about their appearance and feeling sexy and desirable to their partner. For other people, they don't really care too much about their appearance. And it's about feeling healthy and having energy to play with their kids or grandkids or do hikes in their neighborhood. So I really love getting to know people and their individual goals and helping them get closer to those. For me personally, I have gone through so many different phases, as most of us have. I did have disordered eating in my past. When I was a child, I had a lot of depression and anxiety from a very early age. It's almost sad to think that a child as young as 8 could have these problems, but I did. As I went through high school, I learned that restricting my food was one way that I could feel like I was doing something good, that I could feel safe, and that I could feel like people would like me better. It kind of made me feel like I would be protected from judgment. And nobody could at least say I was fat. They could call me stupid or selfish or other things, but at least they couldn't call me fat if I kept myself thin. And then as I graduated from high school and went into college, obviously studying nutrition, you start to learn that your body has needs and that it's not just a matter of more food or less food and being heavier or being thinner, but actually that there's nutrients we need to keep our immune system going and to have energy and to reproduce and to really live a good life. You have to be nourished. And I think a lot of people, when they're in their college years, we learn a lot more about ourselves. We break away from our immediate family environment for a lot of people, and we are thrust into this organization that has thousands and thousands of people. And I think I learned a lot about myself during college. And I started to learn that my emotions and the way I experienced the world were what really made things good or made things not good in my life. My physical size was not all that crucial. You know, what was more important was having a life that made me happy and having meaningful experiences. So when I started nutrition coaching as a professional, it was always not just about appearance for me. It was always, I wanted to help people find that there was relief from painful emotions through taking care of ourselves, because that was a lot of what I found. You know, I definitely learned how to manage emotions and communicate better and take care of myself from ground zero, from really not knowing how to do it and thinking that, you know, starvation was the best coping mechanism I had. I really developed a lot of them through managing my own depression and anxiety. So having come through an eating disordered past, I can speak, I think, more genuinely to people when I say, I understand why you want to do that. And I understand the appeal of overeating and undereating, because they both serve some very similar purposes in terms of giving us something to focus on, giving us something that gives us a semblance of self-esteem, or something that distracts us from feeling the pain in our lives. If we're constantly hungry and thinking about food, that's one way to keep our mind off of something that's painful. Or if we're constantly fixating on when we're going to eat next and get the food that we can't wait to have, that can do the same thing. So a lot of maladaptive food behaviors have a root, I think, in emotional underpinnings or other experiences related to the joy in our lives or the relationships that we have or how fulfilled we are as people. And so Alicia and I have, my co-author on Give Yourself More, her name's Alicia Fetters. She's wonderful. Alicia and I have always seen eye to eye that she's an exercise professional and I'm a nutrition professional. I've really liked her work and her message in terms of, this is not just about your body, it's about yourself and it's about building yourself up. So when you strength train, you might be strengthening your muscles, but you're also building a bigger, stronger version of you. And I always really liked her ethos on that. When we started talking about doing this book, I think we both just got really, really excited about it. And the more we brainstormed ideas, the richer and more exciting the project got. And as you know, the book came out of it. So.
Yeah. And I've had both of you in my ears because I've used Audible to listen to it. And it's really resonated with me in so many ways. And I think that was the big reason why I knew that I wanted to have this conversation with you, because there is that overlap I think we all seem to have in terms of this idea of things being value-based. And the first thing that's a value that we need to recognize is ourselves.
You know, it's not that we don't value ourselves. I think most people have some sort of shred of self-esteem, but often we don't realize that the rank we're placing ourselves compared to other people in our lives, that we're really valuing other people more than ourselves if we assess our actions in terms of prioritization. Like, I know a lot of times I'll be sitting at my laptop and I'm working away, pecking at the keys, and I think, I'm thirsty. After I do this email, and I don't get up and get the glass of water. And, you know, 2 hours later, I'm still going, oh, let me just finish this. I still haven't gotten the glass of water. If somebody else happened to walk into the room and be like, or my husband called out, honey, could you get me a glass of water? Of course, I would just get up and get it for him in 2 seconds, but I'll sit there and push off and push off and delay my own desire for a glass of water. And that's just a theoretical example of something I think many women can relate to. How about you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's something that, goodness, I have dealt with so much on a personal level that I have coached. Sometimes it comes from being what is termed from Gretchen Rubin's world, a four tendencies and obliger. But also, too, I think it has the nurturing and caregiving tendencies that we have and that are definitely promoted in society. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all. I love being a nurturer and a caregiver and caring for others. But you're right, there can be the shift that happens, and it can be so subtle where suddenly it's all the caregiving goes to outside of you.
Right. Yeah. And I agree with you. It's a beautiful thing to be nurturing and caring for others. Obviously, I feel the same because one of my favorite things to do is to care for my clients and help them. And I'm on the internet and returning emails and talking to people at all hours of holidays and everything because I love doing it. It feels really good to connect with and help other people. But you're right that a lot of times in that process, we've distorted the message or received the distorted message that we couldn't do that for ourselves because we're only supposed to do it for other people. And I think that's such a tragedy because it's not like there's a fixed sum of care that we have to give out into the world. And if we use it on other people, we don't have it to give to ourselves, or vice versa. Now, the message isn't selfishness and stop caring about other people. It's to care for other people and for yourself equally, because you're not going to run out of goodwill or love.
Oh, I love that approach, because I will frequently use the saying, self-care is not selfish. And I've been advocating this for years after having my own lesson learned as a caregiver for my mom, which is actually how I got into coaching. It was my own path of healing. And so I feel as though that's very much the same for you with your disordered eating and your anxiety and your experiences that led you to help people as you do. And so interesting that it also led you to have this perspective. I wrote down the phrase when you were talking, emotion-based nutrition. It's like the idea of fueling us in a way that we start to pay attention to the other benefits. And I think that's a really big part of your and Alicia's book, is this idea of saying, look at these things that we normally talk about, movement and nutrition and things like that, and consider all the different benefits that it has. And then it brings you right back around to caring for others. And another phrase I use, you can't pour from an empty cup. If that drives you and you want to pour into others, you need to remember to fill up your own cup. And then if that doesn't drive you, well, then you need to understand that it's simply an intrinsic self-worth of taking the best care of you, because we get one shot at this.
I know. That's a good way to say it. Luckily, it's not like if you've made mistakes up to this point in your life, your shot is just done. Like, thank goodness, you can always turn it around. You know,
All right, everybody pick up on that. We still have a chance. Okay.
We still have time. We can turn things around. It's never too late to learn new tricks and new skills. And I do frame a lot of the things that I teach my clients as skills.
Yeah.
I like that, because even more so than the word habits that I used to use the most frequently, I realized that skills is such a great word, because if you think of, you know, any particular behavior as something that is difficult to do at first, like if you have not been, say, eating vegetables on a regular basis, you don't have the skill of making them taste good. You're going to forget to do it sometimes, that sort of thing. But then as you practice it, you get better and better. It's not like you do it or you don't do it. And definitely it's not the case that people are born successful at something or not successful at something. We all learn stuff. Some things we learn earlier and some things we learn later. Yeah, I think the book, Give Yourself More, is full of really practical skills. I think the last thing we wanted to do was write a fluff book that was like empty, kind of vacuous cheerleading, like, you can do it, believe in yourself, rah, rah. Like, I'm not wasting my time reading that book. No. I want science, I want evidence, and I want stuff that I can do that's going to give me noticeable results. Don't waste my time.
Yes. Science. You're speaking my science language. Yes.
Yeah. So that's what people can expect to find in this book. What we've done is we've taken the idea that for people who have struggles with maintaining healthy behaviors, specifically, most people think of eating and exercise as the things that they're struggling to do, that often the difficulties people are having with those two things are coming from actually underlying deficits that they have. And I don't mean deficit as in a personal deficit. I mean, as in you're not getting your needs met. So for example, rest is such an obvious one. If we're struggling to get to the gym and day after day, we're hitting the snooze button and thinking, I just don't want to do it. I'm so tired. My job is taxing. My kids are taxing. My house needs work. My relationship needs effort. I can't do spin class before going to work. You can see how there's not getting your rest fulfilled will get in the way of doing some of the fitness behaviors that you want to do. Mm-hmm. Along the same vein, if somebody's life is really full of work and responsibility and strain, and they're not having a particularly sufficient amount of fun, then they may find themselves going to the cupboard to get little candy bars, or finding themselves wanting to snack while they're working just to, quote, get through the day. Mm-hmm. That's a really understandable need, because it's kind of like one of our vitamin or mineral amounts that we need a sufficient intake of. We need to have some fun. We need to have some novelty. And if we don't fulfill ourselves that way, that's when we often find that we're going to food or other indulgences like alcohol or gambling or shopping to try and fulfill some of the emotional needs that we have.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned the shopping part of it, because that ties into what I talk about in terms of, as I said before, the whole, you know, semantics of more and less and how I'm trying to help people simplify. And the excess that is created, there's a direct link to that feeling of not being enough, that you're not getting something that you need. I think that's what it comes back to. You described that so beautifully. And when you don't have what you need, when you're not giving yourself those right things that you need, you seek it elsewhere. You seek to fill up that void.
Oh, yeah. One of the fastest growing segments of my coaching lately has been people who struggle with binge eating.
Yes.
So I have my own podcast. It's called Breaking Up with Binge Eating. If you like Lisa's work, you'll probably love it. People often think that binge eating is a problem of excess or of over self-indulgence. You know, they look at binge episodes and they see rampant consumption of large amounts of food in a very hasty manner. Mm-hmm. You know, people who suffer from this think, why can't I just hold myself back? Why can't I just put limits on myself? Why do I have this weak constitution that leads me to take so much? And they feel such shame about it. But really, it's not unlike what you mentioned with shopping and accumulating lots and lots of physical goods. Mm-hmm. Because if we back up, it's often coming from a deficit somewhere else. And we're just trying to overfill it or make up for it with episodes of shopping or episodes of excess eating. What I find is people who suffer from binge eating are actually suffering from holding back too much during all of those hours when they're not binge eating. They're denying themselves even the glass of water or speaking their opinion. You know, they tend to not even know what their opinion is because they've gotten so much practice at focusing on what makes everyone else happy and trying to orchestrate that day in and day out that they've completely divorced themselves from their own needs and desires and wants. So they kind of tune them out and push them down and push them down. And then that kind of correction or backswing with a significant episode of discrete food intake, that's just the natural consequence of a problem with not giving yourself enough in so many ways for so many hours of the day.
You know what I was thinking of as you were describing that was like a slingshot, you know, where you have like a rubber band and you're pushing back.
Oh, yeah.
In denying yourself this whole time. And then when there's finally a chance to release or you know, you just get to that point where you can't push further.
That's such a good metaphor. It's like the problem is the rock keeps flying out of this slingshot and I don't understand why I keep trying to pull it back.
Right. Like,
precisely. Stop pulling back so hard and it will stop flying out the other side.
Yeah, I'm going to remember that. Yeah, it's more about denying ourselves the things we need. And I think that's a great segue into making sure that we touch upon these six parts that are in the book, if you would, please, just to
sure.
kind of go through them and give like a one step or something that we can take away today. I do highly recommend the book though, really and truly. It's right along the lines of what we've talked about here on the Positively Living podcast. But yeah, Georgie, if you would please go through those six parts.
Sure. So clearly nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to deny myself. So we're all doing the best we can. So some of the ways in which we might be able to reveal to somebody that they could use a little more. One of the really common ones is what we call body love or body esteem. And that doesn't mean that you look in the mirror and think, I'm looking so fine. It could just mean that you are appreciative that your body got out of bed this morning and that you're glad that your arms can lift 16 grocery bags and get them all inside without making a second trip to the car. Little ways that you appreciate your body for so many things more than its appearance, you know, appreciating that it can reproduce and bring a child into the world, or that it can express your soul and your feelings through art or singing or dancing. You know, I think the chapters about how we've reduced our body love, they make me a little sad when I read them because, you know, I think about how simplified the beauty industry or the fitness industry or, you know, pick a segment of society, it's made us all think that we're supposed to be smaller.
Mm-hmm.
We're we're all supposed to be less unique, that we should all be homogenous, smooth-skinned, wrinkle-free young waifs, and that there's so much more to us, that, you know, all the women I know, what I love them for is their uniqueness, and not how they look, but their personality. And so our bodies have uniquenesses that we can adore just as much as the uniquenesses of our personalities. So I think there's a lot of really refreshing information on body love and how smaller need not be our only goal.
Right.
The second area that we talk about involves activity or movement. What many women are missing out on is fun, enjoyable movement in their lives. You know, I certainly hear it from a lot of people that going to the gym feels like a chore and I don't want to do it. And I should, but they just don't want to because they're not having fun. And when we think of exercise as the sort of thing that we only do for the payoff, we tend to lose all of the rewards that are part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
If you're thinking about, okay, I have to burn off 500 calories. What am I going to do that? Whatever you engage in, you're not going to enjoy it because you're just waiting to burn off those 500 calories so you can feel like you've achieved the benchmark for the day. But if you aren't thinking about that and you think instead, I just want to get my body moving, what would feel good? You know, I think a bike ride around my town would be really nice today. It's a little warm for a run, but the breeze would feel nice riding the bike. And so you ride the bike. And if you don't pay so much attention to the outcome, you can enjoy the process a whole lot more.
Which is a key to habit development.
It is. It is, as you know, somebody who's well read, that, you know, enjoying something is more predictive of whether we will repeat it than whether we believe it's beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody gave you a workout and they said, we've studied it, this is the most effective workout you can possibly do, you might think that that really compels you to do it over and over, but it's not as compelling as the workout that you do and you go, oh God, that was fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Ask me how I know. And I just have to give a shout out to Zumba. That's my go-to. Oh my gosh. Yes. Awesome. Dancing like a crazy person, and not just dance like nobody's watching. I dance like I don't care who's watching.
Right. That is awesome. That is super, super awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Fun. I love that we're bringing fun into this, because that is, I know it's a predictor of something that I will do again because I enjoyed it. So great. All right.
Absolutely. So
body
enjoyable movement.
Love that. What's next?
So next up, we talk about emotions, and many women feel, they may not think of it in this term, but a lot of women, if we look at how we treat our emotions, we're kind of treating them like we're trying to shrink them. We're trying to not show them. We're trying to not inconvenience anyone else with our tears, or we think we might be nagging, so we don't state our preferences or speak our minds. And so squashing emotions like that, if we look at research on suppression or the mental effort that it takes to not display a response when we're having an emotion, that comes at a pretty high cost. The more that we use suppression on a day-to-day basis, the more likely a person is likely to struggle with depression, anxiety, and several other mood difficulties. Suppression is also something that it's terribly ironic that people often suppress because they want to be agreeable. Mm-hmm. And if somebody else says, let's go get Chinese food, and you're thinking, I just don't want Chinese food, but you say, sure. And so you go, the more that people act that way, the less strong their relationships become.
Mm-hmm.
It actually weakens relationships if you're somewhat of a yes man or a yes woman.
Yep.
And you don't say, you know, I'd really prefer Mexican. What do you think about tacos instead? So speaking your mind lets other people know the real you. And nobody wants you to be a doormat. They actually want you to have an opinion so that they know when you agree with them, you're really agreeing.
Absolutely. It lets them know where they stand, and it's an opportunity to be authentic. And the first thing I thought of when you were describing this was saying it's fine, and you know, it's not fine. And boy, that is the road to resentment right there.
So true. Like if somebody's done something and they're like, did that bother you? And you're like, no, it's fine. I'm like, whoa, careful.
It's fine. Two of the most dangerous words. I mean, I'm laughing about it, but it's also really true. We all know, right? Go ahead and raise your hand, everybody who's like either uttered the words or have heard the words, and then a shiver goes down your spine. You're like, oh, I don't think it's fine.
Yeah, it does not sound fun.
Yeah.
So One of the challenges I make in that chapter is to practice expressing yourself a little more genuinely. And so if your spouse or friend or family member says, "How are you doing today?" consider being honest. Consider saying, "I have a backache from hell, but honestly, I'm really glad I get to talk to you because then I don't think about it."
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And of course, that also brings to mind the idea that, well, we can't always be 100% transparent because there are social norms regarding professionalism. You know, if you walk into a job interview and the person says, "How are you today?" and you just start going on and on about your dog's diarrhea last night and how you didn't sleep, like that might not be the perfect situation. So there are some times when it's helpful to kind of go along with a professional atmosphere and perhaps you do suppress in isolated circumstances, but those should be the vast minority of your exchanges. Most exchanges we have with other people, it's going to feel really good and help improve your relationships if you truly express how you feel.
Right. And you can look to other support systems if you do it intentionally. Say, "Listen, I know at work there are certain things that I have to do and certain things I can't share there, but I'll make sure to connect with friends and be open and honest with them." And, you know, or maybe seek out therapy if that's necessary, or whatever it happens to be, to find that right kind of support so that you're not holding it in, because it has to get out somewhere.
Absolutely. When we don't have any avenue to express, that's when things tend to sort of implode.
That's right.
Lisa, we've talked so far about emotions and kind of how we express them to other people, but there's such a rich world of what all happens in our own selves and in our own minds. Mm. So a lot of the information in that chapter is about noticing your own emotions and how you respond to them. I can raise my hand as somebody who was all-star Olympic level emotional suppression. I couldn't even tell you what I felt for a lot of my youth because I just was so out of touch with it that I had pushed it down and pushed it down.
Yeah.
Part of my growth and part of my coming to a healthy relationship with food and with myself was recognizing my emotions and treating them like they mattered, like actually care how you're feeling. It doesn't mean you stop the world because I have a problem and everyone needs to listen to it. It doesn't mean that your emotions become the center of your activity, but that you don't treat them like they're nothing. You treat them like they're something and you pay attention to them in balance. You neither over-focus on them nor ignore them. And so I have found that's a really, really helpful skill that I teach a lot of my clients right now. And they find that the payoffs in terms of their eating are immense because so much problematic eating or non-hunger driven eating comes from the fact that we have an emotion that we're not wanting to address or not wanting to feel, or we're scared of feeling it. And so we create a diversion with a box of cookies. Those are not things that are required. You actually can find so much more ease and comfort with your feelings from developing skills to, you know, work with them and diffuse the painful ones that you're not so frightened of them.
That's right. And the same connection happens with clutter. And I see it with my clients as well. And the idea there, and I think everyone's heard me say this already, but what you're describing so beautifully is acknowledging and being curious about what you're feeling. And when you're curious, that doesn't leave room for judgment. This is not about saying it's bad or good, but understanding that you're having these responses. They came from somewhere. And when you have that self-awareness, when you seek to understand, and then you can start to make choices that will work better for you to have, like you said, avoiding the maladaptive kind of approaches that we have in this context in terms of anything that we're doing for our health.
Yeah, I love that word, curiosity.
Yeah.
I think it's such a helpful thing to have in mind when we approach anything new.
Yes.
Because it's normal to have some amount of trepidation trying something different. But if you think about it, like, let me just be curious. What happens if I try it this way? Maybe something cool will happen. And if not, I can not do it again.
So. Like, that didn't work. That's okay, right. Though.
Yes, I have determined skipping breakfast leads me to overeat later in the day. I have accumulated approximately 500 data points of this. I don't need any more data. I'm just going to eat breakfast now.
Yeah, exactly.
The next area in which we talk about giving yourself more and how we can do that to our own benefit is food. Obviously my favorite topic because I love talking about food. And this is such a perfect example of where many of us we've operated going about the world, looking at our food landscape, looking for less. Mm-hmm. What has calories? What has less sugar? How can I avoid fat? How can I drink less wine? You know, we're almost going about the world trying to avoid food or various nutrients more than we're seeking the positive. And so if we flip that on its head and say, don't worry so much about the things that you're trying to have less of, but focus on pursuing the things you want more of, such as if you want more nutrients, let's look at the nutrients that are in fruits, vegetables, meats, dairy foods, whole grains. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how we can get more of those into our meals, because they do have important health benefits. So nutrients are obviously a really important one. Many women don't get enough fiber, don't get enough iron, don't get enough calcium. Improving the nutrient density of our diets is one way we can start thinking about more when it comes to food. Another thing that I love to teach people and point out when it comes to our bodies and food is that we can listen to more of the signals we're getting from inside. For example, many times people have gone on various weight loss diets or done programs in the past that have given them rules or a structure or a schedule for how much to eat and when. And what I like to direct people toward, and Lisa knows this inside and out, is to listen for the signals that your own body gives you, because your own body is going to let you know if you're not feeding it enough, if you're feeding it enough, or if you're feeding it too much. There's definite signals other than your pants getting tighter and the scale going up. You can look and listen to other things in your body. For example, if somebody says, you know, I want to lose weight, but I just can't stand the thought of another diet, I find it's really comforting to say, you don't need rules. Let's just be curious what happens if you let yourself feel a little bit of hunger, maybe just once a day if you haven't been feeling it before. Let yourself feel that sensation. Hunger in particular is a sensation much like the emotions of anger that women tend to want to avoid. We don't want to be hungry. It means we have needs. It's scary. It's uncomfortable. But actually, feeling hunger is not a bad thing. I use the analogy in my book, Lean Habits, that it's not unlike being tired in the evening or having to go pee. It's just a normal sensation. Your body's saying, hey, I could use some food, or I could use a restroom right now. Getting acquainted with that and listening to it is a whole new level of moreness that many women haven't explored. They haven't trusted themselves enough.
There you go. You use the word that was on my brain too, is this idea of trust and trusting that it's okay to be hungry because the food will come. And I think when we've denied ourselves for so long, we've trained ourselves in a different direction to be like, well, then we can't possibly be hungry because then what will happen? I won't be in control and, you know, everything will go off the rails. So it is a new form of trust that we have to develop with ourselves.
Yeah, we have to be a reliable provider for ourselves. Because if we're not, well, then we get hungry, but we don't trust that we're going to feed ourselves because we might go on another diet. So yeah, I often tell clients, reassure yourself, you're not going to go on a diet again tomorrow or the next day or the next day. You are done dieting. So from now on, your needs are going to be met. You don't have to eat it all right now, because you can trust that there'll be more, you can relax, and that just feels so good, I think.
Yeah, I had a great moment of that last night where I was ready for dessert, and then I wasn't ready for dessert because my stomach just didn't need it. I felt a fullness where I was like, no, I think I'll wait till tomorrow. And it was a great feeling to also say, you know what? I could totally have it tomorrow.
I know. It is. It's wonderful. I think that never gets old. You know, I hear some recurring experiences from people like, oh my God, I got hungry and it didn't kill me. And that's so exciting because I was terrified. It never gets old. I just love, love, love stories of people feeling happy when they're discovering new aspects of their abilities and their body's remarkable ability to lead them in a healthy direction.
True.
So we've covered four of the areas of moreness. The next one that I'll talk about is pleasure. Now, who doesn't want more pleasure in their life? You know, we talked about fun, which is one form of pleasure. I use the word pleasure talking about a whole complex array of things like laughter. You could call it joy. You could call it happiness. You know, we're not worried about definitions, but all of these positive emotions and the things that create them in our lives, we can have more of them and we can pursue more of them. And it doesn't in fact mean that we're going to be less productive members of society. It doesn't mean that we're selfish if we pick out something that we like. It just means that we're prioritizing our own joy as much as other people's. Kind of ties back to the not suppressing what you want and putting it behind everyone else in terms of importance, but stepping up to the line that doing something just because you enjoy it is allowed. And also, we can often find that when people are engaging in a high level of alcohol intake, a high level of sugar and fried food intake, that often they're trying to gravitate toward these high pleasure items to make up for the fact that a lot of other things in their life aren't providing them with joy or pleasure. Mm-hmm. We all need to have a certain amount of fun. And if we don't get it from a lot of places, then the one that's always there, which is food for a lot of people, we may find that we go to that too heavily or too frequently, because it's perfectly fine. I mean, I love food. Lisa loves food. Great to have joyful eating experiences. But if food is the only source of pleasure in your life, you'll tend to go to it more frequently than your body typically needs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And I'm pretty sure we can all be like, yeah, I remember an incident exactly like that. So, and this just gives us all the more reason to speak up and say, let's find things that make us happy, that bring us joy. I have a free worksheet in my resources library called the Joy List, and it's a self-care guide to figure out the things that you love to do that light you up. And I think when we do more of that, I love the fact that it connects to, shall we say, better eating choices, or eating choices that serve us better, I guess would be the way that I'd want to put that. And I love that there's that connection to all of that, because guess what? There's also a connection to our energy management and to our productivity. So all the more reason to go for the fun.
It's so true. It's a mental drain to be dealing with emotional distress just as much as physical pain. Like it tires you out and you're not as productive mentally. And often people, they exhaust themselves so much from having to get through joyless, difficult experiences during the day. Yeah. That by the end of the day, they're just at the end of their rope. And I tell my clients, if you imagine your distress, whether it's emotional or physical, we can just combine it onto one distress scale. Mm-hmm. And if that scale runs from 0 to 10, 0, you are like totally zen, happy, laying on a beach in Maui, feeling great. And if you're at level 10, you are being burned at the stake, maximal distress. As your distress level rises, which for many people it does during the day, we start off at a certain number and then we're late to work, and then there's a traffic jam, and then we get the call that this happened and that happened, then the boss drops a deadline on us, and that distress tends to have an upward trend throughout the day. And if you let it get to the 8, 9, 10 area by the evening, don't try and rationalize with yourself to eat less dessert, because you're probably past the point of reasoning at that point. Because when we're high level distress, we have an increased tendency toward impulsivity. All of us do. It's a human thing. We all will just eat too many cookies if we are pushed hard enough. So some of the solutions to that is taking breaks during the day before you're really wound up. Do something that's just a bit of a diversion. Take a break. Take a siesta, even if it's 30 seconds, just to breathe deeply and de-escalate that distress. And fun is one of the most rapid ways to de-escalate distress. So I regularly go to theonion.com, read a funny headline or two, giggle a bit, and then go back to what I'm doing, because it just can help dilute, you know, whatever difficulty we're having. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And this is right where you're talking about how stress management, and what we mean by that in most cases now, is relieving of distress. Because again, there's good stress out there too, but it's that excess chronic distress that you're talking about. When we can proactively chip away at that and work at that, because it's inevitable in our lives, but how we manage it can really help us. And it ties into all that we're talking about. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. And as you kind of alluded to, we're so much more resilient for the bumps and bruises of life. Like we can tackle our difficult jobs as mothers, as teachers, as wives, as, you know, nurses, as all of these, you know, difficult things that life brings us when we challenge ourselves. We're better equipped to deal with those and bring our full treasure chest of resources we've had some fun, when we've had some rest. So
love it. And speaking of rest, yes. And I hope we're talking about naps next.
Yes. So that is the sixth area of moreness, in which we challenge women to give themselves more, is give yourself more rest. And, you know, when we, in the last segment, when we talked about fun, we kind of alluded to mental rest as being an important mm-hmm. thing. Give yourself a break from the worries, give yourself a time out from stressing over problems that you can't solve, but also physical rest. As Lisa said, naps are a wonderful thing. And if you just thought, I don't have time to take naps, I hear you. You're not getting away with that secret thought. I know that's the number one objection, that you don't have time to take naps. That's okay, because you probably have time to lay down for 5 minutes. And if you mm-hmm. think you don't have time to lay down for 5 minutes, ask yourself how many minutes you spend snacking, checking things on your phone, or other, you know, little time filler activities that we do during transitions. Because those minutes are often being used in a way that's not fully restorative. It's just a time killer. Yes. So instead of turning on the TV for 5 minutes or scrolling through the news, if you actually just lay flat and took some deep breaths for those same minutes, you might emerge a whole lot more rested than if you just kind of treaded water or idled your engine for those minutes.
Restorative. That's the key word right there. And it's amazing how little amount of time we need to do something that can be restorative. And if you want to meditate, that's fine. And of course, that's one of the things to reduce stress, but even just being calm and letting your brain shut off its mental rest and physical rest at the same time. It's a highly efficient use of 5 to 10 minutes. I'm just going to put that
out
there.
It totally is. Like, I'm not into wasting time. I know you're not either. So
nope.
I actually find one of the most beneficial places to take a mini rest or like a 30 second reset mm-hmm. is when you're going from a busy task into eating, because it's so easy to carry the momentum of like, go, 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 fast, 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 get it done. And then you sit down with your fork and you're like, lasagna in mouth, in, pack, 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 you know, just like
you're in that same energy. Yeah.
Project mode, you know? So if I notice I'm hustling, cause I'm always living on a tight Google calendar, and that I have my meal scheduled into my Google calendar, and the ding goes off that it's time to go to meal, I have to very often take a break to like decelerate and say, yes, you may only have 20 minutes, but that's 20 minutes. You don't have to, you know, hork this down in four. So slow your roll, Georgie, don't choke on your lunch. And I just take a few deep breaths, and then I try and embark on my meal with just a little more relaxed pace, because I am totally a get it done yesterday sort of person.
Sure. And we all go through this. And I think this is sage advice for any transition that you're doing. And I'm a big believer in creating buffer time between appointments and transition time, which you can do with that 5 minute break that you're talking about. It could also be like a 5 minute meditation or anything along those lines, where it's breathing and it's stopping, and it allows a pause between events. And you're giving a great example of why that would matter, because you're carrying that frenetic energy into eating, and we definitely don't want that. So yeah, that's a great example.
Stopping gives you the opportunity to put down the thing you were doing mentally,
yes,
and then pick up the thing you're doing right now, which is eating and hopefully paying attention to your food. Now make a little eye contact with your lunch.
Love that. Yeah. Eye contact.
Don't disrespect your lunch. Look it in the eye while you eat it.
Exactly. A little appreciation, please.
Yes.
Fantastic. So that is the six. And now is, I think, a great time for us to have some fun in a rapid wrap up.
Oh boy, I'm on the hot seat.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Please fill in the blank for me, Georgie. The song that always makes me dance is?
Uptown Funk.
Yes.
Definitely.
One of my favorites.
Yes. Yes. I can't. That song can be playing and I'm on the sidewalk and I have to start boogieing because I just love it. It's such
a
good ear chair.
So. I'm feeling you on that. Yep. All right. And how about the quote or the mantra I share all the time is?
It's just food. I say that a lot to people because we can get so wrapped up in our mistakes. And if we overate or underate or didn't have enough protein, and I say, relax, honey, it's just food. These are not atomic bombs. They're tacos. This is small practice, you know, sessions. This is not the performance of your life. So Yeah, I think that's a short quote of three words, but it's also a really nice ethos to turn back to when we feel like food or fitness has become highly distressing. It's just food.
I love that, because that talks about letting go of this perfectionist tendency that we have, this all or nothing kind of thing that we feel like it has to be, you know, like I said, the pendulum swinging one side or the other. It's just food. And remember what Georgie said, that you have a chance today, even if you're like, oh, I've been a hot mess this entire time and things have been off the rails. You have an opportunity to make a new choice right after you finish listening to our conversation. Even now, you can just pause and go make a difference. It's all good. But there's a couple more things you'll want to hear from Georgie. And one of them is a resource book or app that makes my life easier is
Google Sheets.
Yes.
Love a good spreadsheet. I use Google Sheets to make trackers for all of my clients. Mm. So they can see what they're practicing and then a simple checkbox for each day of the week. I usually put 2 weeks next to each other. It helps to see every time you open your spreadsheet or your tracker that there's 14 days there. And so if there's an X in one box or not, it doesn't make or break you. But if you do have a lot of excess stacking up, you can kind of see like, oh, hey, look at that. I practiced this 10 times in 2 weeks. And you can see how that's going to make you better and better, rather than focusing in on what I find is an unhelpful level of detail. Mm-hmm. When people start to track individual things and hour to hour decisions, and heaven forbid, detailed food logging, I find is missing the big picture.
Right.
So yeah, I love Google Sheets. It enables me to log in and see things real time. If my client is updating their spreadsheet when I happen to log in, I can see them poking around in there. And I just love my Google Calendar. Yeah, I love Google products.
Yeah, I do too. And this is a great way that you can visually take note and to celebrate, like you said, the process that we're focusing on, the process, not the results, the habit, the learning, the skills, doing those things. Okay, awesome. Now, last but definitely not least, what or whom are you grateful for today, Georgie?
I love the internet. I'm just so glad it exists.
Me too.
I often think like, man, the days before we had the internet, we were missing out on so many awesome things that we have right now, mm-hmm. including being able to meet people from halfway around the world, including being able to explore hobbies and crafts and find micro communities that we didn't even know were there, yeah. being able to even just share things like photos with other people wherever they are in the world and not having to break out a photo album.
To learn and grow and have support systems and connect and
oh man.
Yeah.
And for research, like having all of the information available. So I can be lying on my couch learning about what the latest science is in emotion regulation or protein metabolism. Like I just love it that I can access it and then think about it and share it with people and talk about it. It's just such an amazing tool.
I agree. I'm grateful for that. And I am so grateful for you. Thank you so much for coming on today. I would love for you to share a bit about where everyone can find you, get extra support, connect with you.
Sure. So you can enjoy my podcast if you struggle with emotional or binge eating. It would be a great fit. It's called Breaking Up with Binge Eating. So you can also search my name in Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts and it should pop up. You will also find me as a guest on a lot of podcasts. So just know that you'll see that too if you put my name into Spotify. Another place you can find me is on Facebook. I am pretty active in Facebook. So, you know, you can find me just by searching for Georgie Fear. You can also take some of the free courses and resources at my website, which is nutritionloft.com. And if you're interested in group coaching or we're working one-on-one with a private coach, we have lots of solutions there so I can help you out. And lastly, my personal website is georgiefear.com. It has links to articles. It has links to back to Nutrition Loft and other things in my podcast. So you can search around there too. And you can get in touch with me via the contact form. If you have any questions, I'd love to hear from you.
Wonderful. I'll make sure to have the links in the show notes. So to make sure that you can find Georgie's websites and find her on Facebook. And also I will put a link to yours and Alicia's book give yourself more so they can get that. And then also come join us in the Facebook group connected to the book. That would be a great way to stay connected and receive support and, you know, start giving yourself more. I think that'd be awesome. Thank you, Georgie. Thank you so much for joining me today, for shining your light in this world and for sharing it with us.
Thanks so much, Lisa. It's been a pleasure.
Go back and take care of yourself. Your body needs you. Your feelings need you. Your perceptions need you. Thich Nhat Hanh. Thank you for joining me on the Positively Living podcast. Your time is precious, and I'm honored you chose to spend it with me. Would you like to further explore the topics you've heard and implement what inspires you? Could you use some coaching support? What if you could attend a private Q&A with my guests and access bonus content? You can do all that and more in the Positively Living membership community. Check the link in the show notes or head to positivelyproductive.com/membership to enroll. I look forward to having you join me next episode and in the community. Until then, keep it positive and keep making space for what matters most.